We're going to start.
Okay.
Because our guest isn't staying long. Okay, so what do you want to do?
Maybe you could describe a little of what your view is of.
My view?
Your experience.
In my experience?
Or what you would hope that this kind of experience would provoke.
Sure. Like yeah.
I tried. I failed miserably, I'm sure.
Oh, you didn't do
bad. I told everybody want to hear about your crappy life. You're so much more poetic.
Like, is this a meditation group?
It'll come to me. We're ruled by distortion, by distraction, by bracing and anticipation, by this, you know, low grade, subtle, chronic panic. We become rigid and crusty and defended. Angry, disappointed, victimized, victimizer, right? We wonder, if we wonder, whether there is something sacred, something palpable, something that's not just a storybook from a Middle Eastern culture declining, long declining. We wonder if something sacred, something palpable can be felt by us presently. Not through the filtering of religious idolatry or religious accusation. Something that might be, call it true. That does not obey human belief systems, human I forget the word. Starts with an S, doesn't matter, it'll come back. Something that's untouched, untethered, and not manipulated by human thought. We might wonder if there is a possible end to confusion, to enmity, to frustration. Otherwise, if we don't ask big questions like these, then we sell out. We sell ourselves out, and we figure out how to survive and habituate to, right, the cacophony of weirdness that life appears to be, and we wander through, we wander through malnourished, and we dare not touch or feel this craving inside ourselves. Because it's too risky, it's too scary. And then, of course, you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of snake oil salesmen and saleswomen that will enroll you in some form of witchcraft. Conformist reality, belief system, loyalty, tithing, right? All kinds of ways that these helpmates impose on you, not to release you, not to free you, not to help you find your own dignity, but to enroll you in, right, their need. So again, we become dupes to belief, superstition. And we think if we believe fervently enough, if we participate in the superstition and the litany and the liturgy of the religious system, the belief system, that somehow we'll be delivered. It'll make us safe. We'll belong. But we do so by compromising our own autonomy, because we feel compelled to belong to something. Not to ourselves, but to something else, someone else. We succumb to the influence of, popular media, celebrity culture, financial successes, reality TV. We become pushed around and manipulated by everyone and everything that is vying for our attention, for our loyalty, and whatever we might have in our wallet. And that's the entirety of the mediocrity of the human species. The Pope came, that was bright. There's TED Talks. I mean, you can spend hours, if not days, on YouTube looking at 1,000 different gurus across 1,000 different disciplines and see if you can pick up some, morsels of truth for yourself. What we really want is the wisdom that comes with cessation. The cessation of belief, the cessation of space, the cessation of time, the cessation of self. By looking for satisfiers, you have to become extroverted. You have to look outside yourself for something, someone to satisfy you. Right? And then you're fractured again. Cessation of self is unfracturing, is, you could say, a return to wholeness, autonomy, dignity, intelligence. But not for the purposes of building a new religious field, a new idol. For the purposes of resting deeply, profoundly, wondrously, with great novelty in your own experience. You don't have to practice compassion. Nobody gives a shit anyway. So what you have at your disposal is a streaming profundity, streaming mystery, which happens to be just this moment, just where you are now. This is it. Right. It's so simple, really. You can trace back in your memory all of your hopes and fears and dreams and resistances and cravings and screaming and shouting with joy and fear and da 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 da. You were trying to manipulate the world any which way you could so it would turn in the direction that might please you. Right? And where is all that today? It's just this again. So we imagine that, the value of our lives has something to do with our belief or our superstition or our loyalty or what we insist is true. That we're going to micromanage reality according to how we want things to go. So we grip onto this virtual steering wheel and we don't let go. And yet reality just doesn't pay us any attention. Steering wheel is not connected to anything. So as a creature, as a person, right? we struggle with an inherent systemic confusion. I would dare say our instinct knows that we're unfettered. But we're pushed around by forces apparently outside ourselves that try to convince us otherwise. So inwardly we suffer or enjoy a kind of curious schizophrenia. We have a felt sense of freedom unbounded, and yet we can't seem to occupy it. We can't seem to draw or call it forth on our timetable to our liking. So we shrug our shoulders and give up and just try to figure out how to get as much joy as we possibly can from the humdrumity of, you know, our life. Even if our life's a fantastic one. I mean, even if it's filled with culture and travel and money and media and, I mean, yeah, great, right? You know, once you're no longer in front of the camera, you're with yourself, right? And you could say this lust for fame or lust for celebrity or lust for, you know, being the darling of the media drives people absolutely insane. As one begins to explore the nature and texture of present experience, it becomes quite fascinating, quite strange, not what we thought it was. We maintain the hallucination of ourselves by not paying attention, by believing that the scientists know what this is, or zealots know what this is, or suicide bombers know what this is, or Monsanto knows what this is. Nobody knows what this is. No one knows what this present miracle is. But not that many people seem to care that nobody knows what this is. Instead, we habituate once again to thinking, yeah, we do know what this is. My feelings, my sentiments, my priorities, my preferences, the way I conduct myself, what I hope to get from people, what I might have to offer people. And we seem to forget the unyielding presentation that we don't know what this is, nor does it obey us. And we wonder if we can find some kind of happiness or ascension in the midst of this, which has nothing to do with accoutrements. Right? I mean, if your consciousness is object-oriented, if your experience is object-oriented, then disappointment is your constant companion. Objects don't satisfy. Or if they do, it's brief, and the side effects can sometimes be harming. Suicide's one of those, yeah. So you see, we're streaming forth involuntarily, spontaneously, unconditionally, as presence. That's what you have. You have this. This. But we don't know what this is. So we tend to ignore it and then busy ourselves with the hallucination of a virtual imagination of the life that I have created that I think I'm living, and living well or living poorly. But that's not what this actually is. I mean, it's hard to convince 7-point-something billion of us. It's like, hey, team, what you are agonizing over with respect to what you think your life is not actually what this is. To indulge or take the steps into that kind of discovery, to peel away the onion of yourself, of the texture of present experience, of what it might be, what it might not be, how it presents itself to you, whether there's any gifts in it for you, that you only do by invitation. Something, as in whatever this is or isn't, has to invite you to be curious enough to find out what this presence might actually be. Otherwise, life's good or life sucks, and I don't give a shit. And, you know, honestly or observably, that's how most people, if they're people, function. Some part of the trajectory can be accompanied by or motivated by wanting to mitigate, lessen, or end suffering. Maybe we do meditation, and maybe we do yogas, and maybe we drink ayahuasca. We do what we can. We join a few meetups. We get some messages from the other side. We start wearing bright clothes. You know, fulfill ourselves or complete ourselves with spiritual accoutrement and ritual. But that won't do. You want to get under the skin of what we can call present experience or reality as if there were one. You want to get under the skin. You want to find out. You want to feel this in the way that it is capable of being felt. And that has nothing to do with the accoutrements of self, with how you frame what you call your life. So there's you could say a necessary abandonment, which can happen very suddenly and very quickly in someone's life, or it can take the greater part of their life. For someone once invited, of course, to wean themselves from the myth of consciousness itself, from the myth of all accoutrements, from the myth of space and time and a life lived. You could say you become fascinated by presence itself. That it's so, not what's in it for me. Right? Yeah. That's a certain kind of abandonment. That's a certain kind of renunciation. But it's not like you have to give away the accoutrements that you've accumulated in your life, though you may, of course. What you're giving away is something more dear to you than the stuff in your closet, the stuff in your garage. What you're giving away is your one's continued fascination with delusion. That's renunciation. See? Not I don't touch money, I don't have intercourse, you know, I only eat what I get in a bowl. I mean, that's cool too. But that's not the true giving away. The true renunciation, the true giving away is you are not encumbered by the presentation of consciousness, sensate consciousness. Now that's strange because we think in order to be satisfied as a person, as a human, as a body, I need stuff and it's got to smell a certain way and it's got to be put in the places it needs to be. Something sneaks up on you it taps you on the shoulder. It presents itself as wonder. The cessation of continuity of familiar voices in your head. As a space, availability. And you know it by feeling it, not through concept. Not through imposition, not through seduction, manipulation. No, you know the invitation or presence of your own freedom by feeling it. So it catches your attention, you know, maybe when you're 2, 6, 16, 26, 60, you know, it visits upon you throughout your life. And we're nourished by those brief interludes of the felt acknowledgement of freedom, of presence. But we're usually too busy or wound up, right, with our own agenda to give ourselves over to those invitations. So they're easily forgotten and they don't last long. Maybe we share them with an intimate friend and we're surprised that our friend has had those moments also. But, you know, that was fun. And we go out shopping or drink, or both, I hope. And who knows in what order. Yeah. So our informal get-togethers are dedicated, if you will, to feeling this. Consciously, willingly, voluntarily, withdrawing from the world of imagination and fantasy. And resting in the sensation, resting in the lightheartedness, the elasticity, the revelation of this freedom. The depth of the satisfaction that comes is not because you've been given something. The depth of the satisfaction that may come is that you're relieved of craving. One is relieved of craving because presence is nourishing. Presence is sufficient, more than sufficient. It's immersive. It's demanding in a good way. So you give your heart over to the presence that is yourself, not anyone else. You give your heart over to the presence that is yourself, and that is the cessation of craving. And it's challenging in a frenetic social didactic called the United States or wherever to turn your loyalty and your affection over to the cessation of craving. You think, well, I can't support myself that way, right? So we very easily become engaged in the responsibilities and obligations of conducting ourselves as reliable adults, hopefully, right? Emotionally mature, hopefully, adults in the so-called world. And we think that that's where the gold ring is, that's the ticket. That's what everyone else is doing. I would be shunned or foolish if I were to withdraw somehow from the neuroticism, the psychosis of conformist reality, and reside in cessation. You know, that's why there are monastic cultures, probably abused these days, right? But you could see that the monastic way of life was a way for people that wanted to, were nourished by, you know, dedicating themselves to cessation and the end of craving, could thrive and do that. But there's so much other, what would you call it, pressure and behavioral schism that accompanies modern day monasticism. Yeah. So we have a kind of a challenge to live cooperatively, participating in some degree of conformist reality so we can be useful, make whatever modest living we're capable of making, and tune and turn our attention to the nature of being. There's always something to do. Fortunately, there's always something not to do. It's amazing what happens is we learn to tune our attention to presence as felt sense and witness its perturbations without assigning a story. Otherwise, we're racked with the pride and sorrow of living in a story. You could say we're living in our own lives vicariously because we're not actually present with the miracle of presence. We are functioning and dwelling in a hysterical manner, in a virtual reality created by thought and imagination and sentiment. So we're living vicariously through ourselves, pushed around by unreality. When we settle down a little bit, and the engine of distraction and the engine of craving and the engine of time and the engine of story deflate. Then you can feel yourself. You're not imposing anything upon present experience. Present experience is not imposing anything upon you. We don't live in that loop of self-justification that is operating all the time. Stories I tell myself, decisions I make, what I like, what I don't, conversations I'm having with myself about everybody else. Yeah. We discover a quality of being that is untainted by fantasy. That would be this. It's always this. You know, we think, oh, I have to go see, you know, this person and this program and that program, or, you know, wherever it is I have to go. Where do you have to go? It doesn't mean you shouldn't go someplace and enjoy yourself, or go someplace and have a shitty time. But the real question is, you know, is this enough? Is present experience, whatever it may be, enough? That's the question. Is there sufficiency here? Nourishment here? Affection here? Dynamism, interest, curiosity, joy perhaps? Or not? And if not, I'm enrolled in objects. Right? If not, I'm enrolled in time, I'm enrolled in self, I'm enrolled in objects. And all of that enrollment in self and time and objects is aiming where? Curiously, right back here, where it started from, to feel the cessation of craving. We don't really want objects. What we want is the cessation that is accompanied, however brief, by the acquisition of the object. What is joy? Is joy the owning of a thing? Or is joy the release of self that accompanies? It's funny. We go in search of objects. Not for the object itself, though we think maybe, but we're actually going in search of the object for freedom from self. For joy, which is unconditional, non-dependent, not object-smothered. Joy is not object-based or object-smothered. Joy is this. These kinds of explorations, textural explorations, conversational explorations, are dangerous to what you're not. They're threatening to what you're not. Hopefully, ideally, they're nourishing for what you are. But that invitation has to come somehow. Some kind of opening, some kind of trap door that invites you in to you, to a whole different dimension of how you experience experiencing. Otherwise, people to meet, planes to catch, things to buy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. You can go. Get out.